This is Directional. With Chantal Ryan and Jörg Tittel.
Welcome. No, I still think that we should do that episode one day where we both just speak with podcast voices.
I'm not sure I have one.
Yes.
Yeah, what's up?
So, this is where we talk about all things nude.
I definitely thought you were going with, this is where we talk about all things new. And I was like, yeah, nice. And then it's like, duh.
No, it's naturistesses. Is that what they call themselves? Naturists?
Yeah. As they should.
Yeah.
I would like to join that contingent. I've just never been invited.
No, welcome to this new episode of Directional, where Chantal and I just decided to have no guests. Yes.
A guest podcast without guests.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just guesting each other today. And, you know, you'll be my guest and I'll be yours.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
Okay, so I'm not even invited.
He's blushing. Yeah. Sir, what are we going to talk about today, guesting on this podcast, Jörg?
You know what, Chantal? I think the thing that's really quite fascinating to me is that you actually make some really cool stuff. And and while we don't like to sort of talk about it much when we talk to our guests who have, you know, who out of, you know, extreme modesty and humility that we both own, you know, we don't want to, you know, take away from their stuff. But I think I'm personally very, very excited about what you're making.
Yeah, you've definitely not made that clear in every previous episode.
No, not at all.
Sure, which I continue to appreciate. Yeah, and I hear that you're working on like maybe one thing, maybe two or five. Was it five different games and films and stories and mad things? You madman?
I'm mad. I'm mad about making things because, you know,
oh,
I think
God. He turns it into spin.
Yeah, I am. you can't just accuse me of insanity and just get away with that.
Fair play.
But no, it's first of all, congratulations on being a 40 under 40 laureate. In Australia.
South Australia. Gotta narrow that down a little bit. Make that pool a little smaller to make myself brighter. But thank you. I was at a fancy gala last night where I wore a gown. Almost no other person wore a gown, so that was awkward. I had been informed that people wore gowns at galas. And it was called a gala. But no, me, the vaguely t-shirt wearing punk, gowned the fuck up and was the gown person. It was great.
I mean, I've only seen a photo on social media. This will be added to the show notes. where you look like
me
a 1920s movie star. It was awesome. Yeah, it was very cool.
Thank you.
But back to our grungy sort of t-shirt and sort of tattoo wearing selves and stuff. But you earned it. You earned that gown. And, you know, you own that thing. But it's interesting. It's interesting to see you celebrated last night, and also at the same time today we have this, noise, and sadly it's valid on Twitter about, you know, these summer game fests having, you know, being summer sausage fests, which is deeply distressing and extremely boring. At the same time. And so in a way, like, I mean, the directional where we like to talk to people who'd like to punch through that noise.
I like to talk to people who like to punch people who do that very
that's true.
Specifically. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
It's not an advocation for violence. It's simply an observation.
Asterisk. Yeah, it is. I think we need to definitely punch. I mean, it's funny because it's like, you know, punch Nazis. But, you know, I mean, Nazis are a problem, absolutely. But they're very punchable. And I'm still waiting for the Punch a Nazi VR game because that would be quite fun.
I hear you're kind of working on that, but go on.
Don't give anything away now.
Edit it out, Paul. I need you.
But you know, we can do a lot of this with our own games as well. But at the same time, and as I've seen with The Last Worker, it's like you can make something that is has things to say and has lots of conversations around it, etc. And people may not necessarily, you know, tune in en masse to engage with that content. It's funny, like when I was giving this keynote at Reboot Develop, where we both were in Croatia just a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. dear listeners. And I gave this keynote, and I was basically just talking about, wanting to for us to start thinking about the meaning behind the mechanics in our games, and I was sort of almost physically attacked by someone after the keynote.
Hearts and minds were rattled and shaken.
Yeah, and it was weird because it's like, I mean, I was almost punched, actually, bringing back to that. But it was interesting. It's like I pissed someone off because I made them think about the games that they just thought should be purely fun. And and I agree that games should be fun.
Absolutely. Completely.
I mean, C Smash, which is coming out on the 23rd of June on PlayStation VR2, is pure fun. It's like pure delight, and it's physical and social and gorgeous, and you get to dance and if you want to, you don't have to, because you play this like crazy futuristic racquetball game in space. And so, like, I'm not here to preach and freaking teach you anything other than bring delight and joy and make you feel good in yourself and with someone else. That's fine. But I'm not making you colonialize space, strip all of those resources on another planet, shoot everything that moves, and, so you can build yourself a bigger spaceship and then colonialize another one. No, I'm just, that's not what I'm doing in the game.
Are you saying there are different shades of fun?
Ooh, different shades of fun. Sounds like a good movie.
I think they made that.
Yeah, it's like the knockoff movie, you know, the rated PG version. Different shades of fun.
Really? I thought it was gonna be a rating above. That one actually was banned in Australia.
Oh, that brings us back to the naturist idea, maybe. That's cool, actually. You're a naturist, sort of all-nude space explorer who's desperate.
See, look, I would play that.
And
see, yeah, like, we want real subversion, people. We want nude colonists in space. We're tired of people shooting each other in space. It's been done.
Yeah.
Let's have some fun.
And instead of collecting and stripping sort of resources, you get to get yourself new forms of alien genitalia with which you sort of expand your avatar.
All right, so look, I think we just need to stop the podcast right now, and we just should probably go make this. Like, this is a hit. It here first. This is how games are made, people. If you ever wondered where the ideas come from, this is it. This is the good stuff.
So do we go to Ubisoft with this concept? Do you think they'll like it?
Oh, I think they'll love it.
Because it's not political. It's like, you know.
No, it's very specifically apolitical.
Yes, it's also actually very French. I can totally imagine, like, you know, having this meeting and going like, yes, in this game you get to be completely naked, and you get to have like genitals from all the different corners of space. So yeah, so boring sort of sexless, mostly white men talking about brands in front of big screens.
Yeah.
That's
were you showing C Smash at something to do with the Summer Games Fest? Or was that
where Summer Games Fest has become this sort of endless sort of stream of events loosely tied together? I mean, I will be at the Future Games show on Saturday, which I think is associated with this overall umbrella of Summer Games Fest.
Yeah, I see. So you're part of the problem.
Except it's actually hosted by a woman in this case, which will come as a shock to many people.
So not part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm terribly sorry for all the men whose sort of, you know, reality will be shattered by the fact that a woman actually is talking about games with fashion, with actual passion and authority.
Were you about to say fascism?
Fascism, yes. What we need is female fascism at last.
Bring on the matriarchy for a little while. See what that's like. Yeah, no, that was a bit of a sausage fest, and people were some people were a little bit upset about the lack of women presenting at the Summer Games Festival, is it? Summer Games Festival or Summer Games Show?
I don't know what the first one was called. That was that was Jeff Kiley's thing. One of my favorite moments in this particular show, which was there was a guy from like the Marvel Snap game who came on stage, and I'm going to move away from the mic a little bit because this is going to be my impression of this particular moment. It was like, "Hey, bro, how's it going? Check out the new content." Hey, Jeff. So that was the Marvel Snap appearance. And once that moment of shouty white man awkwardness finished, and even Jeff Kiley was quite disturbed by it, clearly. Once that individual left the stage, Jeff then goes like, wanted to let you know that this show is brought to you in part by NerdWallet. And you're like, what the fuck is NerdWallet? But so that's literally what this is all about, money and nerds.
And wait, what was NerdWallet? Because it really sounds like a crypto thing.
It might be a crypto thing. I think it's a thing that stores your money if you're a nerd.
Wallet? Okay, yeah. So we're giving him some good free airtime here. But it's not a bad name.
Directional, not brought to you by NerdWallet.
Now pay us. So yeah, I did not watch it because it aired at a solid 3 or 4 a.m. Australia time. So all I caught was the discourse, the Twitter discourse. And what I did catch was reading the Twitter threads that talked about the lack of women, or I think it was The Verge posted an article about the lack of women presenting there. And so we kind of got a large subset of, you know, regular gamers, not people who are invested in the typical discourse, like the game dev discourse, as we call it. Our kind of inner circle talk, where we do have a lot of conversations about representation and equality and representation. But we got to hear from the everyday gamer, or at least a vocal subset of them. And I was genuinely, even after, you know, a solid, God, maybe 28 years of being a gamer and being in online spaces and gaming online and being part of gaming communities, I was still a little bit surprised today when I read through the comments of these threads and I saw that probably 9 out of 10 comments were people supporting the fact that there weren't any women who presented on that stage, and their reasons kind of went from it doesn't matter, like there's no reason for us to care whether or not a woman is presenting on stage, all the way through to women don't really exist in the industry. The reason there aren't women presenting on that stage is because women simply don't make games, and you know, it'd be really hard for them to hunt down a woman to, you know, parade her around the stage. So of course there were none there. And yeah, I don't know, it's 2023. I thought, like, you know, we might have just crawled forward a little bit in the wider social understanding of the industry, but no.
No, I mean, I think that's what's extraordinary is, like, the more things get quote-unquote democratized, the more the world becomes fair, or we think it does, the stronger it pulls at that sort of elastic that of the status quo, and that elastic, the red rubber band, is really trying to pull us back so hard right now. And you know, and in some instances, like, you know, we've seen this happen in the US, for instance, where Florida has legislated in favor of, you know, healthcare providers, whether it's a drug manufacturer or a pharmacist or a doctor, right to refuse service to someone based on ethical and religious or whatever beliefs, which of course is completely targeted at LGBTQ people or perhaps even women, whatever, depending. And you go,
whatever,
wow.
Your flavor of bigotry is.
Exactly. And you go, like, wow, this is the land of the free, or the leader of the free world, supposedly. And they've technically always been on an upwardly curve in terms of human rights, having really done some fantastic anti-human rights stuff very quickly. You know, they were literally established as a country based on the cruelty and sort of oppression of others. But still, they've been sort of clawing their way gradually out of it through all sorts of, you know, social movements and brave people and et cetera, et cetera. And to see that shit now going not just back, but like truly backwards and sort of almost, but with real fervor, and for that to be even supported by citizens in this supposedly modern world that we're in, that's crazy. It's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's scary. I'm not sure it should be so surprising there. I don't think we've necessarily had that much of a moral backslide so much as the bigots of the world have kind of been able to collectivize more. They have formed stronger, more unified communities, and they are kind of banding together to be more loud than ever. They've been figuring this out for a few years now. I remember speaking with Lee Alexander, who we had a wonderful episode with. And she mentioned that if you trace it back, Gamergate was actually kind of like the first moment you can really pinpoint the organization of what came to be known as the alt-right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that wasn't, yeah. It wasn't that long ago as far as, you know, kind of like social history goes. Was it 2014 or something, Gamergate happened? Please don't quote me. I'm absolutely terrible with dates. It's amazing I passed history.
It is. I remember it as if it was yesterday. It was just lovely.
Oh, yes. That wonderful time. But yeah, so I think that they've been organizing. They've slowly been coming together in these more, I don't want to say disparate voices, because they're not so long ago, it was absolutely normal and acceptable to be homophobic. In the 90s, which were kind of my formative years, the idea of standing up for homosexuality being okay was still fairly radical. We had Seinfeld, actually, I remember, was kind of like a big moment for Western society when they dedicated an entire episode. This was, you know, the most watched show by far on the air, like the most watched show of all time. And they dedicated a whole episode to this kind of playful tossing around of the two of the main characters being gay. And they weren't gay, but every time it was insinuated they were, they would, you know, point out that they weren't, but they would immediately follow it up with, not that there's anything wrong with that. And, you know, on one note, it was a bit of a comedic beat, but it was absolutely something else at the same time. It was a very loud message to society when they knew that they had a very loud and influential platform. And so basically the message over the course of this, you know, 20-minute show was, being gay, there isn't anything wrong with that. There isn't anything wrong with that. And that was a really kind of iconic moment in history. And I think it's just really, it shows how, you know, this episode that aired in the 90s, which wasn't particularly long ago now, you know, that was kind of just our childhoods. It was radical to say there's nothing wrong with being gay. And so when we take it, we walk it forward to 2023 now, where we've got these kinds of big, loud pushbacks against trans people and their basic human rights and your safety being queer and open about it. I don't know that we're really kind of walking backwards as a society, more so than the bigotry that's always been here and been systemically institutionalized, has just really organized and been able to penetrate progressive spaces, these spaces where we kind of have raised ranks and made our own kind of loud vocal messaging. And yeah, we're being penetrated, I think, is really what I'm trying to say here. They have managed to unify so loudly that their voices are now intruding into even what we perceived were safe spaces, and are shaping you know, legality and democracy as they have been for all of human history.
But God forbid I should tell them that they're actually penetrating me, because that would really shake up their entire worldview.
That's half the fun.
Yeah, see you in space, asshole. But it's, I mean, we will name this episode after some sort of space naturist thing, aren't we? I mean, we have, we'll come up with it. You know, we may not come up with a druid thing, but it's going to be the most.
And before we move on, let me just say, you know, I'm in Australia. I try to keep up with politics, but I'm not abreast of all the kind of like the motions going on, particularly in places like the US, or if I've missed a kind of big glaring issue that people are facing that, you know, I've just dismissed, that was absolutely not intentional. And, you know, like,
well, we can't, I mean,
don't hold that against me, please. I will fight for you. If you need me, I will come.
No, that's the thing. It's like, it's interesting because it seems still that that America is, you know, the most influential, you know, a force culturally in the quote-unquote Western, quote-unquote free world, blah, blah, blah. And therefore, you know, I observe, you know, their politics quite closely because, you know, they're trendsetters, you know. Mm-hmm. And also trend destroyers and world destroyers as well in so many ways, unfortunately. But it's it is interesting to see that that things seem to be going backwards. But also, hopefully, this is just a sort of to speak to those who subscribe to Nerd Wallet, etc. Kind of an Empire Strikes Back moment, you know, mm-hmm. potentially where you know they've had their cages rattled, you know, they're coming in with full force and. And hopefully we'll punch him back.
Yeah, there's a financial term that I quite like. It's called the dead cat bounce. It's, you know, when it's often used in economics, when the market falls, it'll plummet, but then it'll often kind of bounce back up as people kind of scramble for a deal or to like scrape up what they can get. And so you'll actually see a little bit of an upturn, but the plummet is still happening. So it'll come back down.
Yes, it's that zombie hand sort of crawling out of the dirt during the end credits, you know, just before.
Sinkhole opens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where we're, yes.
Yeah, I think we've got a long battle ahead. I think these things are fought generationally. You know, I don't believe bigotry or homophobia will be eradicated in our lifetimes. I think that we all need to be fighting that fight every single day. But a lot of these attitudes are so ingrained from tradition and, you know, people our age being raised by people who are deeply homophobic. And we really, the roots need to be pulled out. And that only happens when we remove ourselves from the roots. So I did have a moment there, actually. I grew up with an extremely homophobic grandfather. He was very vocally homophobic. And we were very close, not, you know, despite the homophobia. I was a child, please don't judge me. But I was always deeply bothered by his open homophobia. And yeah, I'm a queer person. I identify as pan. I love everybody. But I always kind of knew that about myself. And I was always very comfortable with it. And so like,
we're not talking about Peter Pan and we're not talking about the pan flute. These are two different things.
Yeah. Never could stand Peter Pan. Pansexual, the lovely nature god. That is my kind of god. But yeah, so an interesting thing happens. I've never not hurt my grandfather be homophobic every time the topic has come up. There, you know, as I got older, I began to argue with him. But I did this year on Facebook. I just tapped out a little note and it was something like happy pride to my queer family. And had a little, you know, raised fist of solidarity and some rainbow flags. And my grandfather liked my post. And he is, you know, he's fairly social media savvy for someone his age. And I stopped dead in my tracks when I saw that. And I had a moment. I was like, what? What just happened? Like, did this man in his late 70s just kind of like quietly voice his support for my queerness?
Is this the hate button? No,
like, no, because he's not, he's too socially media active for that. So, you know, I talk about it being generational, but we're doing good work here, people. Like, even, even people who are old and have been kind of bigoted all their lives, like, are kind of occasionally seeing love and acceptance. And we do hear those stories every day too, of people who love family members and who are forced to confront the hatred and the you know, the resentment they have in their hearts for certain kinds of people, and then they realize that those people are the very people that they've always loved. And you know, as many times as we get really sad, devastating stories of people not being supported, I do often hear stories where people were surprised at how the people who loved them were able to kind of flip their mindsets and continue to love and change their minds.
What's interesting is like that term, you know, queer family, and this, and you had an, you know, sort of by blood family member then like it, when in fact you were talking about a different form of different kind of family. But the word family, I think, is beautiful in this instance, because the word of community has been used against us now. You know, it no longer means anything, because it's ultimately a word devised by corporations, by, you know, brands, by social media and other big data companies to essentially like segregate us into target demographics. Target demographics even more. It's like we're walking around with like reticles right on our you know, between our eyeballs. And it's the idea of actually not building a gaming community, but a family of that actually embraces people and loves them for who they are, and embraces their difference, and they will love them no matter what. As you also said about the Seinfeld episode as well, it's like, and there's nothing wrong with that. That maybe that is how we will combat it, is to actually not use the words that have now been sort of usurped and also have lost their meaning. Maybe we need to indeed, you know, embrace love as a stronger even message.
Yeah, I find that it's really interesting that you bring this up. I was actually thinking about similar things today. I was recording a podcast for a different podcast, the West Side Fairy Tales podcast. I know I'm a traitor. Please forgive me.
Are you podcasting someone else?
Am I stepping out on you? I might be. I'm sorry you had to find out this way. But yeah, we were talking about Dark Web Streamer, and somehow I got on the topic of, you know, the people who have kind of come along on our journey, strangers who have kind of fallen in love with this crazy project. And I noticed that I used the word family to describe them, just kind of like knee-jerk instinctively. I talked about the Dark Web Streamer family. And I remembered having a moment after I said that. I was like, oh, like, you know, was that an okay word to use? And I think what I was thinking about was this big and justifiable pushback against corporations and companies using the word family to represent the structure of workers that they have. So we are at this company are a family, and how that concept of family has been wielded against workers by, you know, saying, well, we're a family, we have to stick together, we have to support each other, which is often code for we need your free labor, and we need you to sit down, shut up, and do what we tell you, even if it is detrimental to your life, because you're family, therefore you're us. And so that was a really common term for many years. You know, I think you can trace that back to like the 50s, this like corporate family culture. And so I think it's interesting that you bring up this kind of like exchange of the words of family and community, because I agree with you. I don't like to use the word community now, because I think it has kind of acquired this almost exploitative or dehumanizing connotation of like this is our community. This is kind of like our target subset of people, and we understand our community by the metrics that we have kind of assessed about them. And these are strategies that work well on our community. And that is absolutely not how I think about the people who kind of show up for us again and again. Like, you know, some people might call them fans, some people would call them kind of like our games community. But for me, I get to know these people and I get to care about these people, and I ask about their days and their lives, and they ask me about mine. And I really feel like family fits that kind of authentic, genuinely caring vibe where, yes, like we're here because we all have a shared interest, but we're really here because we like spending time with each other and learning about each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's like another word which is interesting, and it's and of course, because the sort of colonialist, sort of racist overlords will surround that word with all sorts of negative connotations and probably put images of spears and other stuff in one's mind. But the idea of a tribe as well is interesting. The idea of actually belonging to a group that will fight for each other and for what's right, and they'll protect each other, and they'll take, and if indeed we're going to be holding spears and shields, then, you know, we'll also make sure that our kids can hide behind that shield while we fight back. You know, it's interesting. I was like last weekend, I was in Paris for a couple of days, and I was hanging out with some amazing people like that. Some of the best video game creators in the world right now. And I won't name them now, but there'll be some news in the future about us working together on things. And it was we were up till 4 a.m, two consecutive days, just talking away and eating and cooking for each other and exploring, you know, independent shops in town and doing all sorts of human stuff. And we didn't talk about video games at all, but we were talking about video games all the time, essentially. Mm-hmm. I realized that human exchange that we had was one that is now feeling or starting to sound and feel a bit like what we've seen, you know, the Hemingways describing their experiences in the 20s in Paris, or the Lucases and Spielbergs and others hanging out at the end of the 60s, and trying to think like how do we change this thing around a little bit? How do we do something? And
this is our beatnik moment.
It is good. And I feel that. And I want to, like, I really hope that, you know, people, you know, listening to our little podcast corner of the world here will understand that we're here. Like we're here. We are family. We are a tribe. And we will continue fighting, and we are, and we will be vocal, and it may lose us a few sort of corporate bigwigs on the way, but their days are numbered.
But fuck them.
Fuck them. Their days are numbered. And you know what? And also, I'm very happy to run parallel to them as well. If they want to continue, like, accumulating.
Something for everybody.
Sure. You want to engage? You want to go and play in the fascist corner? You go right ahead. Have fun. Yeah. Yes.
Just close our gate over there.
Yes.
For everybody.
But yeah, I'm. Of course, we have completely failed to talk about your game, which and this will continue happening because the best way to talk about your game and my game and other things that we do is by not talking about them directly, and it's actually just to talk about the world at large and bring amazing people into this conversation, as we will also do in the next episodes and so on. But occasionally, dear listeners, I think, you know, if you don't mind, Chantal and I might tune in with each other and just respond to current events, especially in what we, you know, what is called the video game industry. The sort of sausage fest this week is unnecessary. It's aggravating and it's bullshit. And we need to move beyond this now. And we need to reject these events, and we need to build something better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And we're going to do that. That is what we do. We are amassing our army or our family, whatever floats your boat. Things like this, movements, they cannot be done by one or two people, no matter how angry or passionate or intelligent or capable we are. A movement is that. It is a movement. It is a wave. It is people connecting with people until the force of their mass is unstoppable. And that's kind of why we're here, right? We're not here because we want people to listen to our dumb little brains and our opinions, which, you know, I might overvalue, but I don't expect anybody else to. But we're here because we want other people to know that there are others out there who think like them. And we want to reach out to the people who think like us. And we want to meet you guys. And we want to work with you. And we want to put our brains together. And we want to figure out how we make this movement, how we make it stronger. And, you know, like, that is how we change the world. We do it together.
And we will travel into space together, and we will grow and shed genitalia. At will. Like, you can have none, you can have all of it. It can be attached to your forehead, because our video game will make that happen for you.
Yeah, like I said, equal opportunity.
If you want to be a dickhead, our game will allow you to do that.
Like we said, look, yeah, we're all for dickheads in spaces. And you do you, buddies. We're going to do us.
Yes, attack of the interstellar dickheads. It's great. Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, I think, again, the title of this episode will form. And we might have even mentioned
the dickheads.
Yeah. The dickheads, space dickheads, invasion of the space dickheads. I don't know. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Mm. But, you know, it's quite man centric right there. So I think we're going to have to, you know, like, balance it out, like, less of the sausage fest, you know,
but
we're a little bit corrupted by the discourse.
But isn't that technically what this week has been? It has been the invasion of the space dickheads.
That's true. That's fair. You make an excellent argument.
Yeah, I mean, our game still has a secret title, and it will be far more.
I still thought Cosmic Smash was pretty good.
Yeah. Listen, the avatars in C Smash might be naked if you take a close look at it. Who knows? We're not judging, and we're not telling. You know, it's for you to decide.
There we go. Birth games covered. Done.
Yes. Chan, have a gorgeous evening in Adelaide.
And a gorgeous day to you, Jörg, in London. And a gorgeous day or night to our happy or disturbed listeners out there.
And see you all on the next episode. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Later.
Directional is hosted by Jörg Tittle in London, Chantal Ryan in Adelaide, and produced by Paul Bennin in Los Angeles for Rapid Eye Movers. The theme song was composed by Oliver Krauss and Frally Hines. Follow us on Twitter @directionalshow and listen to past episodes at directional.show. See you next time.